Oliver Sacks is a Renaissance man. He's a neurologist and writer. He loves the Grateful Dead. He's an expert on migraines. He's obsessed with color blindness in the South Pacific. One of his books even became the Hollywood film Awakenings. But Oliver Sacks has one true love: chemistry. In his memoir called Uncle Tungsten, Sacks takes us back to his boyhood.
I was just 6 when the Second World War broke out. But even as a child, I was fascinated by metals in particular, and by the pinkness of copper and the heaviness of lead and gold. And then when I came back to London in 1943, I was 10 then, after being evacuated in the country, one of my 9 uncles sort of took me under his wing as a protege. This was the one whom I call Uncle Tungsten, whom we called Uncle Tungsten, because he had a factory called Tungstellite. He manufactured tungsten filaments for light bulbs, and he refined the tungsten, and he would give me little bars of it. He had a beautifully equipped metallurgical and chemical laboratory, and he sort of inducted me into the delights of chemistry.
Now, he was a man who not only manufactured tungsten, he didn't have just a practical purpose. The way you describe him, it sounds as though he actually loved tungsten. He had a feeling for that metal.
Oh, absolutely. He had all sorts of objects made of tungsten. He would sort of caress them, and, you know, as I do now. And I think he loved its density and its hardness and its refractoriness. And he was a sort of heavy metal freak.
This must have been a fascinating time, maybe a particularly apt time for you to be learning about chemistry as well, with the chemical applications, as it were, going on all around you during the war.
Yes, I think that was partly it, and partly I had just come back from a rather traumatic 4 years of evacuation. Millions of children in my generation were evacuated. Sometimes it worked out well, sometimes it was very traumatic. But I was rather out of love with people, and of course there was separation from family. I saw very little of my parents in the 4 years between 6 and 10. And so coming back, chemistry seemed to provide a world of constancy and predictability. One knew where one was with tungsten. For example, its physical properties, its chemical reactions were there. You could rely on it. You could rely on everything in chemistry. And I think the feeling of constancy and predictability and control and order, the order of the elements, the periodic table, gave me such a feeling of reassurance that the universe made sense.
Were you aware of that at the time, do you think? Was your family aware of what you had gone through?
I think insufficiently aware. My parents were both very busy and preoccupied doctors in the war. My mother is an emergency surgeon. My father is a general practitioner. I don't think they quite saw. I think they were both immensely sensitive to the needs of their patients, but I think it may not have been quite clear to them what was happening with their 2 younger children. Although years later, in fact after her death, I found a journal which my mother had kept in September and October of 1939, in which she had wrestled with herself and with really the governmental command to sort of send the children away. She had wondered whether this would be psychologically dangerous. I think it did turn out to be psychologically dangerous, but perhaps they couldn't have known and perhaps they didn't realize.
Well, perhaps it was also very nice for you to find, to be reassured in a sense, that this was not an easy thing for her to do.
Yes, certainly when I came back to London, they were wonderfully supportive and allowing. You know, I had a little lab of my own, which was full of dangerous and poisonous things. I could have blown up the whole of northwest London. You know, and if I filled the house with sort of toxic, foul-smelling hydrogen sulfide, they didn't get too rattled. They had me install a fume cupboard installed, or hood, as it's called over here, and sort of told me not to use such huge quantities of of ferrous sulfide.
And you did set up the lab near the backyard, I gather.
Yes, so and by the lawn. So if something caught fire or started emitting noxious gases, I could rush out. I mean, the lawn became deeply charred. It had been charred at the beginning of the war by incendiary bombs, and it was finished off, I think, by my chemistry. But they allowed it, and I think they also saw how it sort of stabilised me and delighted me, and how it absorbed me. And it absorbed me in all sorts of ways. The history of chemistry and the lives of chemists became enormously interesting to me.
Well, it was one of the things that fascinated me is that the people seemed to be as important to you as the things that they discovered.
Well, I think this partly came from my Uncle Dave, my Uncle Tungsten. He had various chemical heroes. One of them was a Swedish chemist in the 18th century called Scheele. Tungsten is made from a mineral which is now called scheelite, and he would tell me stories of Scheele, and then I would read a biography. But the personalities of Humphrey Davy, the English chemist, fascinated me.
He was
enormously.
One who was particularly important to you, wasn't he?
Yes, well, when I was very young, my mother had taken me to the Science Museum in London, where there was a model of a coal mine up on the top floor, and a Humphrey Davy lamp, the lamp which he had developed to avoid explosions among miners. I loved repeating the experiments which Humphrey Davy did. He was the first to make all sorts of metals, sodium and potassium and calcium and so forth, which he was able to do by using electricity. Electricity was a new, a current of electricity was a wonderful new phenomenon, which came out in the year 1800, and it enabled all sorts of things to be done. Davy was obviously very emotional, and his lab assistant described him as dancing with joy around the lab when he made potassium. And when I first made some potassium and saw these metallic globules come to the surface and burst and catch fire, and the violet flame, you know, I also wanted to jump with joy, although my parents were rather alarmed at seeing these flaming globules going in all directions, and they insisted then that I should sort of wear goggles.
Now, was it at this time that you began to also go with your father some on his house calls?
Well, my father was a general practitioner, and his life partly consisted of house calls, but certainly from the age of 10 or 11, this was another thing I did. I would sit beside him in the car. You know, there would be a list of patients he would see. And sometimes I would go inside with him and see his examination, to see him percuss a chest and listen with a stethoscope. I loved to see the sort of delicacy with which he did things. He said that he could learn more by tapping and listening and looking at a chest than from an X-ray.
You began your medical training very early, in a sense, then, didn't you?
Well, I suppose so, with both my parents being doctors. And there were negative aspects of this as well. My mother was a surgeon and an anatomist, and I think she tried to induct me into anatomy too early. She would bring home little, sometimes stillborn fetuses when I was probably 11 or 12 and sort of demonstrate them, ask me to dissect them. And then when I was 14, she arranged with a colleague for me to dissect an adult. Actually, it wasn't an adult. It was a girl of my own age. And I found this very, very horrifying. And yet, you know, my mother adored anatomy. She had a very strong feeling for structure of every sort.
One of the things that's clear from the way that you talk and write about your parents is that they taught you things that they were not aware they were teaching you.
Yeah, well, my father had been an intern to Sir Henry Head, who was a very great neurologist. Interestingly, the two greatest neurologists in England in the first half of the 20th century are called Head and Brain, Henry Head and Russell Brain. You know, whether their names determine them to go into neurology or whatever. But Henry Head, even at the height of his reputation and his powers then, himself had Parkinsonism, and my father would describe how Head would festinate, would have this helplessly accelerating gait of little steps getting faster and faster, and have to be caught by one of his own patients. And I had difficulty imagining this, and my father then did an imitation of this, careering down Exeter Road, as a road by our house, and getting faster and faster, and getting me to catch him. He was a very good mimic. And these were not cruel mimicries. I think they were his ways of entering, of imagining what it was like for his patients and communicating what it was like.
These things that you learned, because clearly you did learn from him. I mean, these do, in some ways, predetermine the interest that you have had during the rest of your life in people who suffer in these ways. It sounds as though he taught you to imagine.
You know, at first when I was writing this, I stuck rather strictly to the chemical and the metallurgical, and then some of these other memories come in. Incidentally, I can't write about anything without reliving it, and now my office is sort of filled with crystallizing solutions and bars of tungsten and little spectroscopes and all sorts of things. But at first, it wasn't clear to me that there was any connection between that far-off chemical boy who was in love with physical science and the physician I am now. But then I think probably with these recollections of my parents and so forth, some of the connections started to come in.
Oliver Sacks. He's the author of the book Uncle Tungsten, Memories of a Chemical Boyhood. Sacks lives in New York City and is a practicing neurologist.